Hello and welcome to the Voices in Montessori podcast, brought to you by the Greenspring Center for Lifelong Learning. Please subscribe to our podcast so that we can continue to support your important work. Dr. Montessori said, an education capable of saving humanity is no small undertaking. We agree, so let's get to work. I'm Tamara Sheasley-Ballas, and in today's episode, we're talking about Montessori outreach and how we can redefine access and equity. My guest today is Tatenda Blessing Muchiriri. Tatenda was born in Zimbabwe and discovered his love of Montessori when he moved to China, where he had the opportunity to work with children for 7 years before moving to Boulder, Colorado in 2015. Tatenda is passionate about Montessori philosophy and received his American Montessori Society Infant and Toddler and Early Childhood credentials through the Montessori Education Center of the Rockies. He was privileged to be a part of the AMS Emerging Leaders Fellowship second cohort in 2018 and the Moonshot Adventures Fellowship fourth cohort in 2020 and the second cohort Iterative Space Fellowship in 2021. Tatenda also served between 2019 and 2022 as a board member for the Colorado Montessori Association and is currently a board member for Montessori Education Center of the Rockies. He now resides in Denver, Colorado, where he is the founder and chief dreamer at Montessori on Wheels, a Montessori learning program that seeks to expand access to Montessori education in Black and Brown communities, inspiring learning beyond walls. So welcome to Tatenda. Thank you so much for spending your time with us today. We're so looking forward to this conversation.
Same here. Thank you so much for having me here today.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So you're really doing something quite extraordinary. You're stepping straight into the issues of equity and access for children who may not have access to, let alone a Montessori classroom, but even Montessori concepts. So can you talk about what originally inspired you to create a mobile Montessori learning space on a bus? Like, what was that aha moment?
Me? You know, honestly, you know, everybody has, you know, the person that brings them to education, right? Like, you know, when you think about that child, when you think about that experience, I think for me, it's me, right? Having grown up in Zimbabwe, without being on a school bus ever, I didn't go to school on a school bus, you know, I walked to school 3-4 miles every day, which was lovely, right? Because I learned so much from that. And then having lived in Beijing, London, and the United States, where I saw school buses was like a thing, right? And especially in the US, the yellow school bus is like a school identity in a way of, you know, the way people think about their schooling. So that there was that part of me that has always been fascinated with this idea of school buses. When I think about children being transported to school on a school bus and how I'd grown up in Zimbabwe without a school bus, but having every winter, summer holiday, having to go to the village on a bus with my family and listen to different stories and how much also the learning was happening as well. But honestly, the idea was not so much about the school bus when we came up with the idea of Montessori on Wheels. The initial idea was really, how can I move Montessori education? How can we take it away from the schools into the communities so that we have our Black and Brown families also being exposed to this beautiful way of engaging children in learning? So having taught in Beijing and in Denver, Boulder, Colorado here, I had noticed sort of like a trend within my own teaching that I was mostly teaching in private schools. So when I sort of made a change around about, you know, the time we had the pandemic to teach in public school, I really wanted to have kids who looked like me or who might have had some similar experiences like me to also be in a Montessori environment with me. So with that understanding or with that motivation, I had asked the principal of the school here in Denver Public School that hired me to open the first ever Montessori classroom within an existing elementary public school, that I wanted to really engage parents before we opened the school in the fall. So that summer, with parents come, and you know, we were outside on the playground because COVID, right? So they were being exposed to Montessori materials. So I was like literally putting Montessori materials in my car, and they enjoyed it so much that when schools open, we only had 4 identifying BIPOC kids in my class of 16 kids in a very, very low income neighborhood, in a way where you would expect to see more kids who look like me, black and brown kids. So I started asking myself, like, what was it really that made them not choice into Montessori, classroom? And I had to go back and ask parents, like, we enjoyed doing this over the summer. What was it really that was impactful to your own experience and to your child experience? And what then led for you maybe not to choice in right away? Mm-hmm. And one thing that they shared, which was very evident, was that they really enjoyed the idea of me coming to them and giving them this exposure, which then clicked to me that that's where the secret is, right? That they cannot choose what they're not exposed to. So they still need more exposure before they can choose it for their kids. So what was really lacking was nobody was staying still in the community, giving more exposure, more understanding of what we do in Montessori. So that was the aha moment, like, maybe this should be on wheels. That's where it is. The magic is it has to be on wheels. It has to be moving. It has to stay within communities.
So are you saying that, I just want to get clear on this. This is so fascinating, that you started a program and what you recognized was only 4. You only had 4 children of color out of 16. And when you talked to the families, they said, we need more exposure, and then we would consider Montessori. Like, they're not even in the conversation about Montessori right now. And so your aha was, hey, I'm gonna create this to bring Montessori to them. I'm gonna expose them so that then when they have those opportunities, they can opt in. They know what it means. They know the value. They have the understanding of the model. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is so accurate. And wow, to give you more perspective into that, because, you know, these things, they always work in the way in which we sort of, you know, came to education, came to Montessori. Myself, having been exposed to Montessori when I was in Beijing, what got me was I had that exposure and I promised myself that I was going to stay for like 6 months, and I stayed there for 7 years, right? So it speaks to how much exposure sort of helps with then choosing something for yourself when you have an experience and understanding of what it is. Because what had happened was that when we were working with families in Denver, initially they told me that they know of Montessori education, they know of that school, they know of those fancy materials, right? It was something that was a little bit at a distance for them from them, right? So hearing them saying to me that what really they enjoyed was me coming to them, getting that exposure, getting to be comfortable, getting to understand, like, exactly what is learning here and how are we doing learning when these kids are exploring, when they are touching these materials. So it gave them an opportunity for them to see themselves as observing their child as a learner. Like, I get to understand who my child is. And with that, then I can choose what's best for them. Which I think for most parents who have had exposure in different learning ways, that's how they choose it for their kid, because they know the value, because they've had some exposure in alternative education models like Montessori, like Waldorf, like anything else. So that's exactly what then became clear, that they needed that first for them to be able to choose it for their child.
That is such a big lesson for all of us. What an important lesson. I know this isn't our topic for today, but I want to share with you. I think it's worth going down this path a little bit. We have about 33 and 36% of our students at Greenspring Montessori are children of color, self-identified by their families. And I had a mom, an African-American mom, tell me, we were trying to support her child in being here. He was new. He came at the elementary level. And she said, you'd be surprised, Tamara, a lot of Black families do not trust Montessori. And I had never heard that before. That was such important information for me. Have you heard that? Is that something that is in that world?
Yes, I have a story that sort of speaks to that exactly. We had an African-American father who had, you know, come through our parent-child session that we had offered. So when it was time to collect feedback, like, so what was the experience? What can we do better, right? Leaning into more feedback. He was quick to say that this is good, but this is not how our kids experience learning. This is not how they sort of experience life. It almost feels like a bubble, right? Mm-hmm. So there was an element of like, I kind of want to get it. But at the same time, it sort of doesn't feel like, it doesn't mirror, you know, the way in which we live life, the way in which we even think about learning, right? Which then led another conversation into, you know, how they've been exposed to education, how they've experienced learning themselves. But yes, they told us that this was a bubble. Like there is something that doesn't really resonate or doesn't really give them the way in which they want their kids to come out of it more prepared for life or to be around others.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. So then we, as a Montessori kind of movement, have to be conscious of that and cognizant of that, and then really do the work to offset that experience for people as much as possible, make it as your work is, as engaging and really address the issues of access and equity and understanding, right? Because right. That's a piece of what's in the way here too. So can you talk right. about how Montessori on Wheels is addressing equity and access, and then maybe we have some more lessons we can learn from you?
Yes, we are on wheels, right? So you can't talk about access when you can't do education with families, right? Because I think the way in which we think about access at Montessori on Wheels is really shifting the way in which we do education, not to them, but with them. So mm-hmm. with them for us is literally going to places where they exist, where they sort of have power. When I say power, I mean to say where they're more comfortable, where they mm-hmm. know that they have ownership of where they are, right? Because mm-hmm. most of our Black and brown parents' experiences in education or in schools is that they're always called in when there's something happening behavioral with their child, right? So already they're coming into that space without having more knowledge of what has happened and how to sort of navigate through that experience. But when we go into their own space, it's by invitation that we are at their local school that we're partnered with, or we're at their local church, or we're at their local library, or we are like at a space right now where they get, you know, services, you know, social services, right? So they do have some understanding of like, you're in my space and I'm welcoming you into that so that I can learn with you. So we really think of access as going into those communities and understanding what has happened in the community and what mm-hmm. has been their own experience with education. I tell you, Tamara, that one of my cultural shock being from Zimbabwe, right, and being in Denver and having a program that was on wheels, right, a school bus, I had parents who had lived through the busing era that also didn't trust the idea of any school bus, right? Because their own experience was that they were bused out of their own communities for better education somewhere else. Mm. So when they had to interact with us, they instantly, fortunately, they were attracted to this idea that we were the ones coming to them to offer their community for kids to see it as a learning space, that education also exists within my community, not there, not at, you know, in that county. So our bus became this another different narrative to them of how can we heal from busing when we now think of buses as not taking our kids, but bringing that education to us so that mm-hmm. kids get to see education within their communities, not to go to that fancy Montessori school that exists in that neighborhood or in that charter school that's, you know, way far out in my district, right? So it really, for us, means the way in which we then started thinking about the bus has been more symbolic, right? Like when the kids are on the bus, we are creating an environment. It's not even a school on wheels. It is an environment where they get to like look outside and see their community as a living space, where they get to dream, where they get to really explore, right? So when you come on our bus, it looks so different than in the Montessori classroom because it's literally exploration. They're attaching those materials, they're getting to ask questions. They're not like really not exposed to this 2 or 3 hour work cycle. We are really trying to get them hooked and learn more and like experience the magic with the intent that they then appreciate it, either do it at home or choose it for their kid in their different districts or in their neighborhoods. So we really think of equity as not expecting them to always come to a service, but how can we bring that to them so that they don't have to always think about transportation or how to get to good education for their kid.
Mm-hmm. And so you're finding that these structures that you said are also supporting homes, right? Like part of what you're bringing in, it sounds like you're asking, allowing the children to really have the experience of being fully engaged with the materials. We're not saying, hey, stop, you need a lesson on that. We're saying, yeah, isn't that cool that look, and let me, maybe I can show you this, that it does, right? And you're working with the child in that way. And then what you're seeing is that the families are having some experience where they can see the difference and they can see their child be engaged. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You get it. That's exactly it. I think that's what makes us so different, right? Because in that setup, like as I explained it, we are giving parents an opportunity to see their child as a learner. Right? Mm-hmm. Like they get to see them like, oh, what is it that attracts them instantly when they walk into a prepared environment for their learning, right? Mm-hmm. When they walk, no, we had one parent who walked on our bus, went straight to the bead cabinet, and they're like, oh my goodness, it's like a cultural hibiscus, right? It was an attraction. Then we started talking about how that, you know, math, skip counting, multiplication. So really parents appreciate the idea to see their child as a learner, like what is it that interests them? So that I know what else I can provide for them. So I think that's where for us is our focus. Like how can we change the experience of parents so that they get an understanding of who their child is as a learner? So when they go and interact with their teachers, with their schools, they're really big advocates. They know that this is how they learn. You know, they really love exploration. They really love when they sit down and listen and do Socratic dialogue for elementary age kids. Like, there's all these opportunities for them to like really be exposed in a learning environment differently than coming to like dialogue on a particular behavioral issue or like a parent-teacher conference, but they're really involved. And with our programs, I don't know how much you know of, you know, different programs that we offer. So we have the exposure where it's like literally they're getting exposed to the materials. Then we have the engagement part where we are dissecting the materials. Like we have a pink tower, right? So we are looking into what is it about the pink tower that makes learning fun for kids, that makes learning easy for kids to visually discriminate size, right? So when we know what that is, when we extract those elements from the pink tower and we give that to parents, it's access. They are able to understand the material and they're able to then think about what else can I do at home that can also help my kid have interest so that when they go to a school, learning is not new. But it's also like, I've had some experience with that. So we are also like dissecting those materials and giving them the knowledge of what is the noblest cylinder, right? What is happening with the beads? What is happening with the gloves so that they can understand and learn about all this concept? And they really appreciate that as a way of accessing Montessori without having to think of expensive materials or where can I get this material? But what else in my environment can I can engage my child into like really getting to sound the letters? Is there any some sensory input that they can do when they dress, right? So really thinking like this helps us so that we get this sensory input when they're dressing, when they're sounding letters, right? But what else at home can you do so that you don't have to think about buying the same paper letters? So that has been equity like reimagined for us, and also like engagement that has led to strong partnership with our families in the greater Denver area.
I'm sure. I think it sounds wonderful. It sounds wonderful. So what would you say some of the lessons that families have taken home with them are? Like, you know, tell us some of your success stories where you have families who have been touched.
Yes, I think the first lesson has been the, you know, demystifying Montessori, right? I think the word itself is very complex. I think that's where the barrier is for most of our Black and brown parents. When they think of Montessori, they don't really see themselves in it, right? But when they think of it as hands-on learning, like when they come to our bus, it's called Rungano, which is a Shona name for you tell me a story, we tell our story. So storytelling is at the core of what we do. So we really center storytelling first before we introduce them to Montessori education. So they've really enjoyed getting to understand this idea of hands-on learning and dialoguing with the educator. Again, you know, we don't really want to say Montessori guide. So we really try to remove power and any complexities that exist within language and access into understanding, you know, how learning happens when we are all exposed to it. So they've gone home like with an understanding of like, I understand what this is without even saying Montessori, without even saying normalization, without even saying any form, you know, all of the big jargon stuff that we say, right, that we as teachers understand. So that's one thing I think that they have really shared with us, that they understand who their child is as a learner, that I think I know what I can interest my child into, and I know what I can tell, you know, the school that they go to, like, can we try this, right? Because we also partner with those local schools and the teachers so that we can then see how we can also diversify the instruction. Like, that kid might really thrive if you bring them something that they can manipulate as they understand place value, right? So I think for parents, it has been very transformational just to be able to understand who their child is as a learner, which speaks to the power of Montessori, right? It allows you to sit, watch, and then just get to understand who your child is. Because most of them, we did like a project where we asked them to take pictures of, you know, their kids at home. We want to understand, like, when they look at their child, what is it that they are looking at, right? Mm-hmm. And most of them, you know, as parents, you know, it's like, oh, they're wearing that nice jacket. They're doing all that little dance, right? Then we start thinking about, like, what skills are they, you know, are you seeing when they're doing this dance? Do they have this coordination? Do they have the special awareness, right? Things that in Montessori we do when they work on a balancing beam with their toddlers, right? Like, we're trying to develop that. And how does that help with their learning, in their learning journey? So it was interesting for them to be able to start seeing the soft skills that are embedded in this material that we see when they like do the eye hand coordination, when they cross the midline, and like when they think about like, oh yeah, now I know how I can help them to really write so well, right?
That's really beautiful, Tatenda. That's so beautiful. I love hearing that. And what a out of the box way to think about the situation and come up with such a unique solution. So talk to us about what the biggest challenges have been in essentially bringing a Montessori community on wheels to communities that have need.
Yes, I think the biggest challenge has been trust, right? I think like trying to get the trust first before we like, you know, bring Montessori education to them. So we have learned about what else can we do before we bring a bus full of Montessori materials, right? Because kids love buses. So we have find ways in which we make it more fun, right? So that, you know, maybe the bus comes as sip and paint for kids. So it's like lemonade and they have canvases. Then we get them. And it's easy with kids because they love buses. Children love buses. So I think by, you know, in natural occurrence, kids are just going to be attracted to, you know, buses. But getting the parents to step on the bus and like, you know, engage with their child in the learning. Because most of them, you know, initial operations, they were just there but not really involved, because again, they didn't know that they could engage with their child with their learning, right? So getting them to like, you can also just be on the bus with them, because they'll just like send them on the bus and they'll be chatting outside. Inviting them onto the bus so that they also can engage, they can also get to learn. We had one parent at our location in Southwest Denver that walked on the bus and they were like, oh no, she's in second grade, they are not doing multiplication yet. I'm like, well, can we interest you in how we do multiplication with our beads, right? And then like, no, she was hesitant that this is not a skill that they have done yet. And yet here I am, a kindergarten Montessori teacher, like we do this with our 4 or 5 year olds. can I just introduce that to her? So then she watched me as I was, you know, giving that lesson, and she was struck by the language itself. Like, oh yeah, six times six is just six taken six times. It is the language that she's understanding and being able to like, oh, I can do this, right? Not having a shade with just like symbols and, you know, abstract concepts. So I think we had to learn how to also like make the language accessible when we welcome them onto our environment, and how can we really share what we do in simple words that they understand, education, like how their kids engage with learning.
That makes so much sense. Okay, so then what can our listeners do to support access and equity in education? I'm sure you have some ideas.
Yes, I think I want to go back to demystify. Let us not make it very complex. We are privileged to have had access to training. We've been trained, right? So we understand those concepts, as we should, as credentialed teachers, right? But when you're talking to parents, when you're talking to community members, they don't have the albums. They didn't have two summers of training, right? They have you, who have their child, to be able to make sure that they can understand what is really happening, right? So I really think about starting from there, from understanding, like, how do I really make them understand why we are doing pouring in practical life? What skills are they learning, right? Like, so that when they go home, they get to see that. So I really think about language, make language more accessible. Let us really remove the idea that I know I'm a teacher, I have the language, I know normalization. Yes, you do when you're talking to your principal, when you're talking to your lead teacher, because we do understand that language. So really having to deconstruct the language to make it more accessible, and also honoring parents as their child's, you know, as the child first teacher and forever teacher. Like, parents do know their child, right? They have information that helps us understand them, so that when we're working with them, we have an idea of who this child is and what makes them really happy, what makes them really want to learn. Right? So parents can provide that information for us, and we can then provide information on, like, this is what I've observed your child working with this material, with this learning. So really coming into that partnership, understand each other's skill sets as parents, what they're bringing in, as community members, what do they know, and what is their experience about education that affects how children come to school, knowing that these are the conversations that is happening in my community about this type of education that's coming into our community, or this micro school that's opening, or this charter school that is Montessori education. So really understanding, like, yes, where is this coming from? We had to do a lot of empathy interviews before we started bringing the bus, like listening to them so that we understand, like, when we bring the bus, we know how they have interacted with education, with schools, with programs, right? So I think something that came out of that then might help others to think about also how they partner with local communities, is we then changed our model to, like, we really are enriching the experiences of Black and Brown, you know, families in their communities. So who else is doing work with them in these communities that we can partner with, so that we think of it as enrichment, right? Like, you already have something working. We are coming to give you more of that, so that there's more richness to how you expose a child to learning, how you think about learning, how you choose learning for your children. So really thinking about utilizing your community, small businesses, you know, community members, that uncle that you know is lived there for the longest, like, they know the history. They are the storytellers to come and do some storytelling. And that really helps with identity and the confidence that we need, so that they're able to learn knowing that they are validated. Yeah, so really, really thinking of access in terms of relationship and how we share Montessori. Because I think Montessori really is, I was fortunate to be in Beijing to witness Montessori with somebody who had already learned Montessori and was trying to make it more accessible to their own community. So I had the best of it, right? He was also trying to make it really, easy so that Chinese people can understand it. And there was this Zimbabwean guy getting that information, which was very like, yes, I want to do this. Then when I came to the US, it was very complex, almost like you live in a bubble. This, you know, people can, you know, only a small group of people understand what it is. So I think thinking through those lenses, yeah.
Well, what I'm really hearing is a lot of listening. you set yourself up to listen and then to respond to what you heard, rather than so often we think, oh, well, we already know. We're coming from our perspective, our lens, and we're not looking at all through somebody else's perspective of what it may be like to walk into something, as you put it, is kind of all tied up and there's this way of doing things. And if you don't do it this way, then you're not right. And, you know, all of that. And I think that that can be really intimidating, particularly for people who may already be othered in their lives in other ways. It takes a lot to embrace something that's different anyway. So what I actually hear is the listening, and as you underscored, really that commitment to those relationships being foundational for ensuring that there's really as much access and as much equity as we can generate.
Yes. And I'll tell you another funny story to sort of like get more understanding of that concept. So we have the bus, right? And another cultural shock for a gentleman from Zimbabwe for me was then most kids were walking on the bus and they were like, oh my goodness, where's the magic door, right? You know, because they had grown up with the magic school bus, right? So they really were seeing this as the magic school bus come to life, right? Yeah. And I had no any exposure to, you know, the magic school bus. I didn't grow up with it on our television in Zimbabwe, right?
No Mrs. Frizzle for you, right?
No Mrs. Frizzle. And they kept saying that. And I just didn't have any collection of like, what is that, right? Someone's like, oh, I'm going to give you a T-shirt. But then what happened is when I went back and, you know, watched it on Netflix and, you know, just to get myself caught up and like, I need to, you know, be in the same conversation with the kids on the bus. But what I learned from that was that there's something nostalgic about, you know, the magic school bus, right? Because most people grew up with it on their television. So they also have an experience with, you know, the cool stuff and, you know, exploration happening on the bus. And it made me think about, too, also, some of them also inviting teachers and, you know, educators to think about when you think about education, access and equity is what was happening, what's happening to some of our families and children here in Denver with this feeling of nostalgic, you know, is that education should have some elements of it being nostalgic, right? They should be able to make some connection, right? When kids walk into a classroom, they should be able to make a connection to something that then allows them to then learn and engage, right? If they come into an environment, it is their first time and it's just like being bombarded with like things that they don't even know, learning is so hard for them. They have to like work twice as much for them to really understand. Most of our kids, you know, this is a generalization, like, you know, in middle upper class, they've had some experience of some of this learning in their homes, right? Like they have so many toys, they're just like exploring things. So when they walk into an environment where they are given choices to choose, it's easy for them to do that, right? So that's one thing that we also like, you know, are working with our parents to like give kids more choices at home so that when they walk into a mass environment, they're able to like, you know, be okay with making choices and choosing what they want to learn and advocating that, you know, that for themselves. So really tapping into, again, what we've learned when kids came and thought this was the magic school bus, that it was really this a nostalgic, you know, experience for them and having to factor that into our learning, that we hope that when then they go into Montessori schools, that they have had an experience with it. So it's not brand new to them. It's like, yeah, I know, we've been on the bus. We've seen the bus in our neighborhood. We've seen the bus at the local church, at local school. So there is some wisdom in getting to make connections, you know, for kids to have connections in your environment so that they can learn or they're really excited to learn. Because those materials can be abstract. They're meant to be concrete, but they could be like, what is this, right? But hopefully it can be what, you know, when those two of our elderly parents walked on the bus and say like, this is the cultural hibiscus. It was that connection that drew them that, oh yeah, I can make a connection to what I know, to what is in this bus, what is in Montessori environment. And they started dialogue and engage with it and hopefully go back to my grandkids, share that with them.
That is so cool. Okay, so What's next for the, now I want to call it the magic school bus, the magic Montessori school bus.
I like that you can say it. I couldn't say it, the magic school bus, because it is, you know. I think what's next for us, we're getting the second bus as we speak right now. We literally have a second bus. We got funding for a second bus so that we can expand access, right? Because, you know, one bus couldn't be in all the places. So hopefully two buses, we're able to cover, you know, some parts of Denver and hopefully go into rural Colorado or the mountain towns here. But what's next for us is we are really inviting, you know, people who want to learn with us how we can really do better with, you know, outreach, with Montessori outreach, because it is messy, right? It sort of takes a lot of another level of being comfort with having the material that we really think of it highly and, you know, sort of like sacred, to have them just like people who don't have any experience, just like touch and explore, right? So we are really learning on how to really think of a pipeline that gets parents into Montessori, be it for their kids or for them to then take training, right? There could be something prior to that investing in, you know, be it money in training for teachers or for kids. So we're really learning with the community to create a strong program that others are able to do in their communities. So we hope to share this so that, you know, what has worked here in Denver, you learn about it and see how that can work in Virginia, how they can work in Kentucky, how they can work in Kansas. So we're developing a program so that we can share it with others or be able to train others on the framework of Montessori outreach.
Well, listen, you are doing such beautiful, important work. I'm assuming that you can leave us a way for people who are listening, who are inspired by what you're doing, a way to contribute to your program.
Yes. So if you go on our website, www.montessoriandwheels.org, we have a donate button. And again, you know, also contribution could be just like reaching out and, you know, ideation, like engage us in dialogue, share what you also are learning in your communities. We welcome that. Yeah. So thank you so much for the continued support in getting our voices, our program, reach your audience and around the country and abroad.
We need people who think differently, Tatenda. And we're so lucky to have, we're so lucky that you found Montessori and that you're bringing this unique perspective to the children of Colorado. And my guess is it won't just be in Colorado for very long. So I'm happy, happy to support you all in any way we can. Thank you so much for spending your time with us today. We really appreciate you sharing your experience with us.
Thank you so much.
And to our listeners, we want to thank you all for spending time with us today too. Take a look at our website at greenspringcenter.org to view the show notes from today's episode. Tatenda's website is included on the show notes page as well. And you can reach him on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn as well. We invite you to subscribe to our podcast to hear the latest episodes and to join in the conversation on Facebook and Instagram. The work you all do is so important. You know, I think it is the most important. We are raising the next citizens of our world, and we're here to help. See you next time.